just to take on in account with this our previous discussion on the Nobunaga theorization of analysis, you'll find that they have featured this word as a bisho, they have taken it as a whole, and then they have tried to explain its variegated nature on the features, how it is captured in our knowledge system. That's a very important and interesting part of Indian philosophy, that this structure leads to different sort of concepts and theorization in other schools too. They have influenced other schools too, thinking in this way, that it means taking a leap from their position and develop their own theories. That whether the entities on this world are knowable and then verbalizable, that makes a good point of debate around them. That's the thing. Now, if we start to go on. Now, you see, Indian intellectual tradition, bearing a text-based culture for millenniums, as we have already discussed, has developed an analytic model to preserve its sanctity and assurance to proper understanding and learning through a universal method with a vision to the highest welfare of the world. This teaching or learning method, at the same time, though pedagogical in the true sense of it, is still relevant in awarding a society where Shastras or traditional instructive texts are highly valued to keep up the social structure in India throughout the passage of time immemorial. Now, to understand their theory, we need to concentrate on some of the terms they have used off and on in the text. Initially, we take off from the statement by Vatsayana, Vyana Purva Kaha Shabda Vyaparha, that any kind of verbal action actually are based upon our cognition. And this Shabda Vyaparaha, that means the verbal application or verbal behavior, this also been analyzed through different texts, of which I found Bhasha Paricheda to be a subtle and very brief one, just to say that how this verbal behavior happens. And we have already showed that graph on Shabda Bodha Prakriya, that is process of verbalization and understanding, in the last lecture. And that structurization, that graph, is basically based on this statement as Pada Jnanantu Karanam Dwaram Tatra Padarthadhi Shabda Bodha Phalam Tatra Shakti Dhehe Sahakarini. That is, in verbal understanding, Pada Jnana works as the karan, that is the instrument, and the Padartha Jnana makes the door towards, opens up the door towards understanding, and the result oriented out of this kind of behavior is Shabda Bodha, that is verbal understanding. And in orientation of this result, or getting this goal through, Shakti Jnana or Shakti Dhi works as the Sahakari Karana, or the assistant instrumental cause to that. Now, I have found in this verse there are the terms like Pada, Shakti, Padartha, Padartha Dhi, and Shabda Bodha. They play the major role. And let's look at this words, what they really mean according to the Bunyayikas. They have defined Pada as Shaktam Padam. That is, Padas are those who bears Shakti in them. And this Shakti has been again explained as Asmat Padat Ayam Artho Baddhavyo Iti Ishvara Sanketaha Shakti. Padena Saha Padarthasya Sambandhaha Ba. That is, it's a kind of divine will that one should understand this meaning from this word. That is called Shakti, or it may be said like that, the specific relation between a Pada and Padartha should be called Shakti. This is the Nopuna approach of understanding the Pada-Padartha Sambandha or the role of Pada. But in Paninian tradition, we'll find another definition, that is Suktingantam Padam. So there might be a question that how does these two type of definition, entirely different from their approach, happens to define the same thing, I mean the same word, Pada. Now, in Paninian system too, they have explained that through this syntactical construction, how they deliver their semantic position or their semantics through it, so that there is no contradiction at all between these two definitions, widely used in two different contexts, as well as it is sufficient to say that both of them highlight on the point, that is, the relation of the Pada and Padartha. In Paninian model, they emphasize it on the syntactic structure, while in Nabonayan structure, they emphasize on the semantico-syntactic structure. We'll find it how later. Now, what is Padartha? Padartha is not actually simply meaning as we speak it in English. They have defined it as Vritti Jnana Adhina Pada Jnana Janya Smriti Vishaya. That is, this is an object of memory which has been produced by the knowledge of the Pada, which Pada is again dependent on the Vritti Jnana Ashakti Jnana. That means the relation of the Pada and Padartha leads to a kind of Pada Jnana which produces a certain kind of smriti, and the content of the smriti is actually Padartha. Next, let us go to this Padartha Dhi. Padartha Dhi is Pada Jnana Janya Padartha Smaranam. You see, there are two words in this term, Padartha and Dhi. Dhi simply means a sort of knowledge. And this knowledge is specifically a smarana or smriti, which is sanskara janya. This is not necessarily a vritti janya. This is specifically sanskara janya. And sanskara of what? Sanskara of pada-padartha sambandha. Now, through this sanskara happens a kind of memory about the padartha, which is again being induced by the pada-jnana. That means utterance of a Pada is being heard by someone, and then he brings out from his memory the relation between the Pada and the Padartha related to that, and then he confirms that Padartha in his buddhi, and thus happens the Padartha Jnana or Padartha Dhi. This is the position of the Navanayayikas. And then comes Shabdabodha. Shabdabodha for them is a kind of Shabda Jnanam, that is, which has been produced by Shabda. And this Shabda Jnanam again is being produced as Bakyartha Jnanam. That is, the knowledge of the Bakyartha. So, Vakyartha Jnana, sentential understanding, and Shabda Jnana are the same in this meaning. Now, what is Vakya? You have already seen the structurization of Vakya in that graph, and they have defined it as Vakyam Pada Samaha. The collection of the Padas are called a sentence or a Vakya. And what kind of vakyas should be taken as shabda? So they say, apta vakyam shabdaha. That means all the sentences uttered need not be taken as the verificative ones. It's only that one uttered by the apta purushas that should be taken into account as the justified true belief of the sentence. That gives us the real kind of cognition or knowledge, so to say, which arises from Shabda or Shabda Pramana. Now, these kind of knowledge arising out of Shabda Pramana is also known as Shabda or Shabda Jnana. Now, who is this Apta? Aptastu Yatharth Vakta. Apta is that person who speaks in a proper way or whose speeches are reveals the truth in it. How is it? They again go back to Prachina Naya to explain this theme, and what is invariably Vatsayana who illustrates as Aptaha Sakshat Krito Dharma. Aptas are those who has immediate knowledge of the dharmas. That means the pada padartha sambandha, the relation between the pada and padartha. And the most revealing part of this statement is the second one, that is Rishi Arya Mlechanam Samanam Vachanam. That is all, irrespective of whether they are Rishi or Arya or common people or even the Mlechas who doesn't care for the Sanskrit, their experience, if it is real and true, and if they speak about their true experience, they should be called Apta. Now let's go to the next term, that is Vritti. Vritti is a kind of form which remains in between the pada and padartha, as we have already seen as shakti. Shakti is a kind of vritti, and another kind of vritti is lakshana. So vritti is actually the sambandha, the relation between the pada and padartha, and it is divided into two as shakti and lakshana. For the Nobanayayikas, basically highlights this one, shakti, to be taken as the primary tool of understanding. And in case where this tool fails to confer the right meaning or right understanding, then they go for lakshana or the secondary meaning or the extended meaning, depending upon the context that the speaker is using to speak certain sentence. Now, how should one know about this shakti, or how does shakti grow? Understanding of shakti grows in individual, in case of individuals. So again this says, shakti graham vyakarana upamana kosha apta vakyat vakyasya sheshat bribiteher vadanti sannidhyatyah siddhapadasya vriddaha. In tradition it is said that the collection of shakti or recognition of Shakti happens through grammatical rules, which is Vyakarana, Upamana, that is through analogy, in case of how as we teach the children, showing the picture and saying that A for apple like that, and from Kosha, that is the etymologies, and then Aptavakya, direct teaching, Vakyasya Sheshat, this is important for the Mimamsakas because they are depend on the contextual meanings, especially Vivrite also, that is the statement as it is being given through the Puranikas or the storytellers, and Sannidhyataha Siddhapadasya, or you may find some sentences already taken as telling you the truth, telling you the facts, or the real sentences giving you the real meaning. And proximity of this kind of padas or vakyas, that is again context, once again, that in a rounded manner we can say that one can know the relation between the pada and the padartha. Now let's look at this graph, that this way, when someone learns how to arrange the words in a sentence and how to get the sentential understanding, then there also happens to be two levels of understanding and two levels of existing behavior, as one in normal or popular common speech act, and the second one is in the aesthetic communication or literary works. Because in literary works, the poet always enjoys a certain kind of freedom that we common people normally do not do. So this graph says that from ordinary speaker rises the artist or the poet or the kavi. This ordinary speaker has the ordinary world of experience with him, and the ordinary experience with the knowledge, this is the experience, and the language that expresses this normal experience. And this language is being used to open up the door of his world of experience to some else, that is the hearer. This is the common structure. But from this level, when someone rises to be a poet, then he creates a world of one that he perceives, that he experiences actually. And this is a kind of knowledge, and they are quite interrelated. That means mind and intellect, that is manas, the buddhi, sanskara, dharma, adharma, all these things placed together to construct the second kind of world of experience for them. And then they use certain type of language, that is the literary language or aesthetic language, that we normally do not do. And this language is being delivered to one hearer who is actually sa hridaya shrota. Let's say one who will understand this aesthetic communication, that means one who has that aesthetic sense in his heart. If you listen to this language, which expresses the experience of the poet and his world, then there happens to be a certain definite communication. And here you will find that this world of communication is actually being transformed, being developed in this one. So these two are interrelated though, but differs much in their nature, in their expression, and in the enjoyment or understanding. This is in Sanskrit also called the Kavya Samsara. This is Kavi, this is Kavya Samsara, this is Kavya Jnana, this is Kavya Bhasha, and this is Sahridaya Shrota. Now, let's look at another problem in language or in communication, that is ambiguity. Now, ambiguity in language is created due to a reference to agantuka dharma or contextual properties, since these are found in endless number. It is only for this reason that the neologicians felt that contextual properties must be delimited either by the natural property of the padartha or by conforming fixed relationship between a padartha and its properties. That is, when someone speaks something about something, then that particular object might have different kind of properties in it, and you do not know which actually the speaker is meaning, is intending to pass on to you. And that makes an ambiguity in us. That is ambiguity actually. To do away with that, the Nobunayikas found a formulated artificial sort of language where they have delimited each and every entity with their natural properties, and again those natural properties delimit their contextual properties as well. And also they have fixed the relationship. They always look at this relationship also as an avachedaka or delimiter in that case. If you look at these structures, then you will find that in normal experience, if one go for a ghata, that is a pot, with ghatatva, that is its natural property, a jati, with the relation related in relation samavaya. Now this is a total picture of a ghata, and with this particular syntactic property with a visarga ghataha, this means a single pot which stands by itself having some sort of subjectivity in it. Since this has been used in nominative singular. Now if you get a full sentence like this, Chaitraha Pachati, then oh yes, please.
You just sit in there.
Yes, please. Now if you look at this structure, this sentence, Chaitraha Pachati. Now how should one scan this sentence? That means how should one know the experience that is being carried on, being passed on through this sentence? There you find only two words, one is Chaitraha, the other is Pachati. So in these two you will find a person named as Chaitra, and what he is doing, he is cooking. Chaitra is cooking. This is the meaning of the sentence. Okay. Now you see this cooking or paka is taking place in the pot or say in rice or something else. But this cooking is being done by Chaitra. That means there happens to be some sort of priti or some sort of activity in Chaitra. And Nabanayaikas would say that this kriti is a guna padartha, that is a quality. It's a separate kind of padartha which resides in Chaitra. Kriti is a property of Atman, and Atman is related to any kind of individual. This is the first thing. The second thing is, all the guna padarthas are related to the drabhyas through the relation of samvaya. So while you find kriti and an individual as chaitra, there must be the relation by sort of inherence or samvaya in between them. And this kriti again is producing paka or cooking in somewhere else. And this paka and kriti also have janya janaka bhava, or the producer and the product relationship, which is also again samavaya, since this one is specifically a causal relation. The relation between the cause and effect always happens to be a kind of samavaya according to the Nabanayayikas. So they split this sentence as paka anukula kritiman chaitraha. This paka is the effect, anukula is being caused favorable to paka, which is favorable to this paka, some sort of kriti, some sort of activity. And where does that activity lies? Kritiman, who is it? That is chaitraha. This is the Nabanayaka style of scanning a sentence. Now look at the third one. Here you can see an yellow flower, that is pitam pushpam. This is a simple perception. And this perception or perceptual experience, you are transforming it into a sentence as pitam pushpam. Now Nabanayayikas would extract this sentence as pita tvava chinna pita, since pita is another quality, a guna padartha, and it also have a jati or samanya or universal property as pitatva. So this guna padartha is not delimited by any other gunas, it's only delimited by pitatva. So pita tvava chinna pita abhinna, that is identical with which one? Pushpam. Now what is pushpa? Pushpa is again pushpa tvava chinna pushpam. Pushpa is a kind of dravya which is being delimited by the property pushpatva, that is the universal property of all the pushpas. Now this kind of avachinnatva or avachedakatva, they have used it in random, because you'll find that this delimitation is absolutely necessary to define a dravya specifically, briefly, as a distinct dravya from one another. And it's the same with all the other padarthas, like the guna padarthas or the sambandhas, anything else. Because you see, this kriti, in this case, this kriti and this chaitra could have been their other relations, like swarupa, as it has been here, pita and pushpa. But it's not here. There you will find the samabhaya sambandham. And here, in this case, you will find swarupa sambandha, since this pita is identical with pushpa. Whichever is yellow, that is the flower. That this is the way they want to deliver the meaning of this sentence or their experience in this way. So this kind of deliberation in language is the unique method of the Nabanayayikas, so to say. And I have just quoted some more sentences as how they do, they paraphrase the sentences in their own way. As you have find chaitraha pachati, that is paka anukula kritiman chaitraha. The same way ramaha kachati can be said as gamana anukula kritiman ramaha. But in case of Rathah Gachati, that chariot is going, you see, here is the difference. Gamana Anukulo Vyaparaban Rathah. Since Ratha itself is a Jadapadartha, it's an inert, it's an unconscious entity, Dravya. So it cannot have Kriti, because Kriti is essentially a property of Atman, conscious agent. And Ratha is not a conscious agent, it's an unconscious thing. So the gati or the movement in Ratha actually is happening as a kind of vyapara. It's only this resulting to something else, getting to some other place, which is being done by some other conscious agent, not actually by Ratha. Even then, in language, we use such sentences as Ratha Gachati. So they explain it like, why do you say that Gamananukulo Vyaparoban Rathaha? Then so they say, explaining, Uttara Desha Sangyoga Janaka Vyapara Ashaya Rathaha. That Ratha is to be imagined as the locus of some sort of Vyapara, which produces Sangyoga or contact with the other place, that is Uttara Desha. This is the way the Dabbanayayikas experience the world and expresses it in their language too. Now again see, Krishna Janati. Here again, you see, by this Gya Dhatu, Gya root, Gya, what happens? Jnana is actually a property located in Atman. So it's not a kind of anything moving or getting into some other results except expressing something, expressing the content in it. So if the content is not noted there, if you simply said Krishna Janati, then they would scan this sentence as Jnana Ashrayatvaman Krishna. Krishna happens to be one in which is located the Jnana. Okay, so there is a locus locati relation in between the Jnana and the Krishna, the individual named Krishna. And there are some more complicated things like how do you explain this T here and all these things. I am not going to that complex structure again, let's be within these simple structures. Another again, Devadattaha Ichyati. Devadattu wills, wishes. They scan it as Ichha Shayatvaban Devadattaha. Since Ichha is also another property located in Atman of Devadatta, so they express this locus locati relation in their sentence simply by using Ashrayatva, because it is it will be called Ashraya or locus only then when it is being referred with some locati. Without any locati, no entities can actually be called a locus. They are four referential terms in that sense. Now you see, Ghataha Nashyati. Now this Nasha is a sort of Abhava Padartha, non-existing, non-existence, leading to non-existence. Now when you say the Ghata destroys, is being destructed, there you'll find the sentences coming out of that is as Nasha Pratiyogika or Nasha Pratiyogita Van Ghataha. That is the Abhava. We have already mentioned that Abhava is a Sapratiyogika Padartha. That means any absence is to be introduced with his counter positive entities, without which it can never be experienced. So this counter positive entity is here, is Ghata, whose absence is being done through this kind of action of Nasha or making it getting destroyed, being destructed. So in this case, you'll again find the Navyas extend their sentence expressing that relation between the Pratiyogi and its Abhava in the sentence, clearly mentioning this thing. Now Now to the next one, that is Parnam Patati. Again, Parna is an inert Jara Padartha, Jara Drabya, which cannot fall by itself. So you will find again Vyapara in that Parnam, in that leaf, which has some sort of Vyapara, which is again causing this movement called Patana. That is Patana Anikula Vyaparavat Parnam. This is some sort of simple sentence structurization or scanning by the Nabanayayikas. One more important thing that is often debated both by the Indian philosophers and the Western philosophers are the existence of something known as Shashasringa, a square hole like things. There, the Nabanayayikas would say that Sangsargam vihaya apadarthaha shabdabodha vishayo na bhavati yatha shashasringadi. In that case, since the sansarga or the contact between these two things, shasha and sringa, is not at all established because it has never been experienced anywhere by anyone, hence it happens to be a apadartha. It cannot be a padartha. So it never happens to be also an object of sentential understanding also. That is, there is a sloka like Esha Gachati Bandhaputraha Kha Pushpakrita Shekharaha Kurmak Shira Jalasnata Shashasringa Dhanudharaha. This is an absurd slok, an absurd poem. It says, Esha Jati Bandhya Putraha. Look, there goes the son of a mother who can never be mother. Bandhya. Kha Pushpa Krita Shekharaha. And he is wearing a mala on her head, which has been made of Kha Pushpa, that is sky lotus. Okay, and he has bathed in Kurmakshira, that is the milk of turtle, which is never possible. And he is holding a bow in his hand, which is made of Shashastringa, that has been made out of the horn of the hare. So you see, all these phrases like hare horn, milk of turtle, and then sky lotus or son of a bandhya putra, these are never possible on this earth because no one has ever experienced getting them related. Though each and every portion of it, that means bandhya and putra, akasha and pushpa, kurma and kshira, shasha and Sringa, all of them are real entities, but the relation between these two specific entities are never possible. That's why it makes no sense. That's a nonsense sentence, they would say. So this has been said through this statement as Sansargam vihaya apadarthaha shabdabodha vishaya na bhavati yatha shashasringa. Okay. Now you see, if the relation is so much important to them, how does it play role in the linguistic behavior? The relation between word and word, meaning and meaning in a sentence transpires because of sansarga maryada. This is again another Nabanaya term. Sansarga reveals the bhava or the status between two relata along with their particular relation. Now if you look at this graph, you will find the syllables there all lined. If they are related, then they form a pada with semantics embedded in them, and then these kind of pathas again getting related with one another goes for paraphrasing or the sentential understanding and usage. Now look at the implication of this word bhava. This is done from the point of Vaisheshika formal ontology. This is purely Vaisheshika philosophy that explains this position of the Indian philosophers at the basic. Bhavati or happening is an universal verb, and this is practically an atomic sense of transference that is called bhava. And in this bhava, actually there is a punctuation between two entities. This is called bhava. And this actually relates to atomic form of contiguity between all the padarthas, all the entities on this world. And they have also enumerated the bhavas or the this kind of contiguity or particular kind of relation through which all the entities on this world or the padarthas can be observed, can be experienced, like dharma dharmi, adhar adhyaya. Dharma dharmi is like attribute and attributee. Adhar adhyaya is locus located. Karya karana is cause and effect. Vyapya vyapaka is the predecessor and the successor. The abhayava and the abhayavi, the part and the whole. The visheshya and visheshana, that is qualifier and the qualificant. Vachya and vachaka, that is signifier and the sign. Lakshya lakshana, that is defined and the definer, the definition. And grahya grahaka, or grasped and grasper. And through all these bonded forms, you will find all the Indian philosophical schools have established, developed their way of thinking, their way of judgmental propositions, and reaching at their goal, that is finally knowing the truth or the reality, only through this kind of formations or this kind of relative forms and the entities getting like that. Now in Chomsky model, in modern linguistics, we'll find that below surface level, language is generated following grammatical rules level-wise. Now there is a question obvious that can unlimited numbers of sentences can be produced through such private generations? These questions have been raised by Chomsky by himself. Now, a limited number of rules generating unlimited number of sentences happens to define generative grammar, as he defines. In 5th century BC, Panini has set a limited number of rules in Ashtadhyayi for generating unlimited number of sentences with an exhaustive mechanism. But Paninian grammar is not a transformational grammar, while Chomsky's second role of transformational grammar is essential for English language, though fallible. This is not sufficient for covering up all sorts of linguistic behavior all the time. That's why this is fallible. Now, if you look at this, three types of models already we have spoken about. That is Paninian model, where you will find the semantics is at the base. From there, they form the go to the surface for vakya, and this vakya is actually a syntactic or morphophonemic structure for them. This is the final thing for them. In Chomskyan model, as well as you'll find the semantics at the base, and then they go for the grammatical rules or the syntactics, and then they go for the surface or the vacuum. In Nobunaga model, on the contrary, we'll find another level, that is the level of reality behind their expressions. They start from the facts or the visual. And this visual is eventually padartha, that leads to semantic. And these padarthas again comes through morphophonic structures or syntactic structures, and this comes to the surface or to the understanding, level of understanding, as vacuos or sentences. These are the three types of models so far I have tried to get through, and find that this Nobunaga model relating to the facts, the reality ingrained in it, happens to find its place, very important place, in linguistic behavior in a more justified, specific, brief way. That's my claim. Yeah. Because it reveals the truth from the basis of it, each and every point of his expression. Now again, coming back to this comment, as language maps reality, we'll find three parties here, starting with Nobunaga. They take up the visheshas or the nominatives to be the primary part, so they are called as prathamanta mukhya visheshaka. In language, how they maps the reality, that is the question here. There actually, for them, the reality is the world, the dravyas, the visheshas. So they always look at who is the vishesha, who is the subject here, and they try to relate all other matters with that subject to reveal their experience. As we have already found in Chaitraha Pachati, there you will find that they are emphasizing on Chaitra, who is Pakanukula Kritiman. This is the subject, and the rest of the sentence remains as a predicate for this one. For Mimamsakas, the picture is something different, since for them, bhavana or motivation is the main theme of the sentence that is to be understood out of it. So, for them, akhyatartha mukhya visheshaka, all the sentences are actually points out the akhyatartha, that is how it motivates. So, if they scan the same sentence, for them it will be like this: chaitranishtha paka janika kriti. Since they highlight the part of kriti, so kriti would be the subject for them, and the rest of the sentence remains to be predicate, as how is this kriti is being produced, and why is this kriti is so important for them, because this kriti gives birth to the paka, which is being located in, which is being related with chaitra. This is the mimamsaka type of view, especially for the rituals where they deals with the vidhi vakyas. They happen to explain the sentences like this. And bhavana basically is their main motivation of explaining the sentences like that. For Vyakaranas, since the grammatical rules are the prime motivation for them to run on, they feel dhatvartha mukhya visheshaka. The sentential meanings should be rotated upon the dhatvartha, meaning of the dhatu. So for them, the same sentence, Chaitraha Pachati, they will scan it like this: Chaitranishtha Kritijanya Pakaha, where they can center around the root pach, that is to cook, and this pakaha is a product of the kriti which lies in Chaitra, which is located in Chaitra. So this is the way that they relate the whole thing and points around pakaha, that is the dhatvartha meaning of the root. Now here is another presentation of Nobunaga methodology, that is through free diagram of the same sentence. As you have already seen, Chaitraha Pachati, and please keep this in mind that the Nobunayaikas go for the Visheshas only to be the prime factor in the sentential understanding. So they will always point out which one is the Vishesha there, which one is the naming property there. So you find in this same sentence as Paka Anukula Pritiman Chaitraha, this man happens to be the nodal point from which you can differentiate between Chaitra and Pakanukula Kriti. Chaitra is the subject and the rest of one being the predicate resides in Chaitra. But you see, this is also another kind of noun form here. Though the whole thing happens to be the predicating to Chaitra in the whole sentence, when you break it down, you will find two batch of noun forms, one in Chaitra and one in Kriti, which is again producing Paka. So this Anukula being the second nodal point having the causal relation, you will again find there two noun forms as Paka and Kriti. That means in this sentential expression, the facts are actually four or five, that one is Chaitra and Kriti and Paka, and the relation between Paka and Kriti and the relation between the Kriti and Chaitra. These five facts actually operates this kind of sentences and in clear understanding of it. Now let's take another sentence like Bhutale Ghataha, a pot on the floor. There too, this scanning comes as Bhutala Nishtha Adharata Nirupita Adhyatavan Ghataha. That is, Ghata is one who has Adhyata, and this Adhyata has been fixed up, has been delimited by the Adharata, which is again residing in the floor, that is the Bhutala. Now, in this sentence again, you will find a number of nodal points which indicate the relation between the different noun forms, as while you will find Ghataha as one hand, on other hand, you will find Bhutalanishtha Adharata Nirupita Adheyata. This is the prime noun form in this portion. And this Adheyata is again being delimited, being induced by the Adharata, which is located in Bhutala. So in the second layer, you will again find Adheyata on one hand and Adharata on one hand, which is again Bhutala Nishtha, Adharata residing in Bhutala. In third layer, again, you will find Nishtha, that is Adhikaranata or locus locative relationship as the nodal point. And there also, again, you will find two types of noun form as Bhutala and Adharata. So this is basically the Nobunayaika view of understanding a sentence in that way, that picking up the noun forms and their basic relations and their interrelations, how they are getting related to get a total structure which has been expressed in a brief sentence like Bhutale Ghataha. Now from here we'll divert on some theories of sentence interpretation, available in Indian philosophy, where Vakyartha basically means Anvaya or Sansarga, that is the relation between the arthas. As if you can remember that basic graph of Shabda Bodha, and from there, that means depending on how this sansarga is being created or being explained or being captured in the sentential application and its understanding, the Bhatta Mimamsakas developed a theory known as Abhihita Anvayavada. The second one is the Prabhakara Mimamsaka theory of Anita Abhidhanavada. Nayayikas themselves have two types of theories. One is Tatpariyavada. This has been raised by Jayantabhatta. And the final one is Sansarga Mariyadavada by Gadadhara, who was in the Nayayika instance. Another theory we often find, that is Apahavada. This is a Bodha theory of sentential interpretation. This has been raised by Dharmakirti. That is to explaining whether the relation at all happens between the padarthas and the padas or not. Basically, this is the thing. So, this relation is the most important notion in the theories of sentence interpretation in Indian philosophy. Now, I am going to conclude this lecture on saying that in Nabunyaya, paraphrasing a sentence thus reveals the reality experienced, since they exclusively deal with cognitive behavior. That is, for them the world is a prama-oriented one, and they categorize the whole world into these four, either as pramata, or prameya, or pramana, or pramiti. And this prama-oriented character of world is their experience of world, and they express this world through their linguistic behavior. That means their linguistic behavior is being actually being structurized through their cognitive behavior and their relation with the world. Panini similarly deals exclusively with language, hence exercises it with syntactic structuralization. That will deal with our next lecture, when we will talk about Sanhita and Bhartrihari and all these things. Bhartrihari has another development upon Paninian structure. He explains the cognition of language, the cognition behind this kind of linguistic behavior, which is not exactly the only syntactic structuralization. There is a kind of cognitive behavior behind this kind of linguistic structuralization, as we find in Nayayikas. In recent time, Navjoti has formulated generative formal ontology or Vaisheshika formal ontology. He is teaching this one, and I am quite firm that this is the modest and most latest outlook of the Indian to look at the things. As in generative formal ontology or Vaisheshika formal ontology, stance is being created as meanings are entities, events and relations. Hence, looking at categories is a better way to express one's experience to reach the truth behind them. Thank you. Now, if any questions or queries.
Thank you for a very cool speech. Very, very interesting. It seems to me that there's all these theories of language. Is there a there's a big difference between the contemporary theories of language, is the idea of pragmatics and the context in which the social context in which language occurs. We were on this last week, but is it something that was just not taken into account?
Yes, actually, if we could take it in account, the social impact and the ethical or moral teachings in it, that all are in captured in the text. Yes, yes, and to explain the text, naturally we have to go through the basic methodology of text interpretation or sensorial understanding, and it will take me more time to go into those points, you know. So I just presented before you the primary technique or primary structurization, how we can structurize to approach a sentence at least, and then get into its meaning. Depending on the context and the speaker, who is the speaker, what is his intention, how and why he is speaking like this, to take all this into account to explain a certain sentence or statement. That makes a big difference. At the same time, if we look at Veda, that is the core of all knowledge codified in it, all the social thinkings and moral thinkings that we are dealing right now in recent ages, even we have the answer there if we can really interpret them in a modest way with an open mind, not from actually a religious one, but from a researcher's point of view, we can find them quite relevant till today.
These schools were talking to each other for hundreds of years, weren't they, about these issues? It's very interesting.
Yes.
And in contemporary Indian philosophical linguistics, was there a gap, as it were, or has this tradition just been recently, like you've taken up the tradition and you've developed it for us? Is that a more recent thing? Was there a gap in the tradition? Did it die out at all, this linguistic philosophy?
Actually, I should say die out. It's actually experiencing the influence of other traditions also. Because you see, as far as Indian linguistics or computational linguistics has been in very much practice now. Now, but what are they doing? What are we doing for that? We are actually following the Western methodology there for scanning the linguistic behavior. We do not take the Indian or the traditional methodology. So that's why we are trying to get into this generative formal ontology, so that we can look back and find a bridge up between this kind of linguistic analytic sources that is prevalent in modern India and modern world, in fact, so that we can tell you that how we should go about the linguistics, as only as syntactic structurization or what. Should there be any meaning in laying it? Should we look back for that?
Does that mean you're adapting the tradition?
I'm trying to take guidance from the tradition, because the insight is very much there. It's we who can reveal it, if you want to.
Because when you talk about paraphrasing and scanning,
yes,
when you're actually, as it were, doing that from the screen, it seems far more than we would understand by paraphrasing and scanning.
Exactly.
I mean, it came to life when you were actually doing it.
Yeah.
When I read it before on the slide.
Yeah.
It isn't actually. It is some sort of insight, isn't it? It's a much deeper and subtler form of analysis than perhaps we would understand by linguistic analysis.
Because linguistics are there very much, as I told you, in those case endings like that. So if you look at them and the transformation following the Paninian grammatical rules, then at every step we'll find why this is happening. This kind of dropping some portion and adding some portions and getting another form and then getting the final form. And through this final form, then we are fixing up a meaning out of that. linguists are very much busy with doing these formations.
Mm-hmm.
But the meaning inlaid there, mm-hmm. that is the ontology of that thing, that is to be brought forward.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it happens to be half ended goal.
You know, when you speak of facts and truth,
yes.
lying behind,
and their relations.
It's quite, and the relations. It's again, it.
Yeah.
Well, even in the diagram you did, there's an extra level, as it were, there, isn't there?
Yeah.
That, accepted, say, in the Chomsky and all other alternative models.
This Chaitra Harpajasa, sorry. The Chaitra Harpajasa, could you take us through that once more? That's, so the Chaitra cooks.
Yes.
Now, if there was sort of a direct object there, sort of cooks the food, animals, and things, would that affect the spirit? Would that affect the
yes. Actually, this paka means, according to them, this is biklipti, that is some sort of transformation happening in the rice itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting boiled. Okay, so Chaitra himself is not being affected by that
mm-hmm.
kind of boiling, neither is his effort or kriti. So the result is actually the being boiled, getting the boiling one, the boiled rice. Okay. Now, this boiling is being effectuated through certain kind of effort, which is in Chaitra. That there is also will, there is also some past experience of how to do this and why to do this and all these things. There are some more conditions which I didn't bring up here, just to avoid complexity. But all these things are here and laid. Yeah? So behind a certain effort, there must be some knowledge, past experience about how to do it. And you have to collect all those materials beforehand, the preparations. Those things are all around there.
Mm.
Yeah? So after all these things, something is happening which has been actually being desired by this person. Who has got this effort in himself, the motivation for doing this result?
Mm-hmm.
And these three primary nodes we can just detect because they are visible, very much visible, keeping up the effort behind the curtain. So that's why I have taken it up here and just explained these specific actions and their relations following the Noble Nayakas as they really do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, on one of your slides you mentioned how Ajnana is an inherent quality of the Atma.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, for the Navya Nayas, is Avidya also in the Atma? Or is avidya simply the absence of jnana?
What is it, Atma?
Avidya.
Avidya.
Yeah, so jnana is there, which is in the Atma here.
Mm-hmm.
But avidya, is that also within the Atma, or is that...
That depends upon how you explain the notion of avidya. If that is absence of vidya, then it happens to be everywhere, including Atma.
Mm.
Because that is an atyanta bhava, eternal absence of vidya. Okay.
So according to the Navya Nyayas, is it an absence or
yes,
absence?
That's an absence.
It's not a symptom.
No. That's not a bhava padartha. Well, for the Vedantis it's very much one, and that's the point of debate between these two schools, whether you will take it as an absence or non-existence, a non-existent entity or an existing entity. Like darkness. So the Mimamsakas take up darkness as the ninth padartha, apart from this, the tenth padartha, apart from this nine padartha scheme of Nayavaishikas. But Nayavaishikas categorically speaks that tamas, a darkness, is simply the absence of light. So it falls in the non-existent reality of bhava padartha.
Avidya
So whenever you find some jnana which again obstruct that kind of avidya, then that will be set aside, that will be destroyed. They have a very simple system.
Also, I find interesting this notion that you're saying that how you talk about how square circle is not possible,
yes.
and in contemporary philosophy, religion have the same problems that
yes.
they deal with, like. Can God create a rock that he cannot lift?
Mm-hmm.
Can he create a square circle? So it's interesting that
And they just get to a resolution on this point and see about in 10th century.
Mm.
Yeah.
And those are things that are unimaginable, but the other point is the things that are not real and yet we can imagine, like a unicorn or something like that.
Yeah.
How would they explain?
Yes, that is like that you can imagine. Well, but that doesn't.
You can imagine things that.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yes. But
do
you
exist.
Take imagination as an experiencing reality?
Mm.
That's the question. Would you take imagination as experiencing reality? It can only be taken in that graph, as I have already shown you there, in the aesthetic communication.
Mm-hmm.
There you can simply dream of unicorn, yes, you can, because you can expand your world of experience, because you have created your own world with all entities and relations very much created in yourself, which you are trying to share with other. But if they don't have the same world like you have, then it's really impossible to decipher your experience to the other one speaking that I have seen an unicorn, where and how. And then you won't remain to be an ordinary speaker or ordinary experiencer. You are lifting up yourself to a special world with a special experience and special language to express your special experience.
Mm-hmm. So the creation or transformer always depends on the given real.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You start from there. Because you use the same alphabets to spell the word, at least unicorn, and then you take the picture of a horse, and then you take a picture of a horn, and then you try to conjoin them together. But it all happens in your imagination, in your buddhi, not in your outer world. No one else is experiencing that one.
But the created, transformed speaker, world, experience, language, connoisseur, is that the real?
That's the kind of reality for a poet, and also the connoisseur.
But is it the real, or is it
aesthetic?
Is it more real than the real?
No,
as
that's
it were?
The other world, I should say. This other world is the reality of that other world. That affects us in so many ways. You see in theatre, when you find something, some comedy, then you laugh, ha ha ha, because you feel it in our heart. and if you're in tears, then it becomes in tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
How it so happens? Because it's all on the stage with some people who are nowhere related in that. It's only a story that they are giving the formation to. So we take part in that formative world of that one, that they are going on the stage. And we take part in that world and having to get tears or joy with them. It's an alternative. That's the thing.